and that tension between the idea of you want to be this role model. What part of modeling is you model the strength, and what part of modeling is that you model the brokenness?
Welcome to another Prisma podcast. My name is Elliot Rabin, and I'm Prisma's Director of Thought Leadership. On today's podcast, we welcome four speakers, two of whom are researchers and two people who work in Jewish day schools, to discuss what Jewish educators have experienced since the attacks in Israel on October 7th. Our starting point is the research produced by M Squared and the Jewish Education Project titled Responding to This Historical Moment, Jewish Educators, Clergy, Engagement Professionals, and the War in Israel. On today's podcast, we are really thrilled to welcome four incredible educators and people with tremendous experience in and insight into Jewish education, starting with Claire Goldwater, who is the Chief Strategy Officer at M Squared, the Institute for Experiential Jewish Education, who is based in Jerusalem. Ezra Kapelowitz is the CEO of REST, Research Success Technologies, and a fellow at the Center for Jewish Peoplehood Education, and is also based in Israel. Dr. Alexandria Fanjoy-Silver is a Jewish history teacher at Tannenbaum Chat, a Jewish high school in Toronto. And Rabbi Will Keller is the head of school at the Hebrew Day School of Ann Arbor in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome, everybody. So, Claire and Ezra, why don't you take it away and tell us about your study?
Sure. Thanks for having us, Elliot. So this study essentially came out of the shock and the crisis of October 7th, which many people in the Jewish world were obviously feeling in multiple different ways. And as educators at M Squared, we really just had this question about what on earth was going on. And we wanted to understand it a little bit. And we had a whole series of hypotheses about what Jewish educators were feeling. And we kind of wanted to test that. And so we essentially built very quickly with, you know, very little forethought, actually. We built an instrument. We went to Ezra, and we said, can we find out what people are thinking? And he said, sure. Let's ask them some questions. And so we built an instrument, essentially, which we fielded very widely. And part of our intention was really to cover as much of the Jewish world as possible. We at M Squared work with educators way beyond day schools, actually, in all kinds of Jewish learning environments. And so we really wanted to hear from everyone. And we used an enormous amount of partner organizations, particularly the Jewish Education Project, but not just. And so we fielded this survey across the Jewish world, and part of our intention was to make all the findings available to everybody immediately. So what happened was, when you filled out the survey, you could see immediately the results, and you could see how you sort of fitted into a bigger field, because our feeling also was that people felt very alone and isolated. And so when you do a survey, normally you never see the results. And so this way, Ezra built it so that you could do it, and then you could immediately see, oh, wow, look how many people say this, look how many people say that. And so that we thought that would be a sort of an incentive or advantage, at least. And so it went out to about 1,500, well, it went out to a lot of people, but it was filled out by about 1,600 people in 20 different countries around the world. And out of those, about 30% were from day schools and yeshivas. I'll leave Ezra to say a little bit more about what we actually discovered.
Amazing number of respondents in such a short period of time.
I think it really spoke to the need. It really spoke at that moment, I think, to the fact that people wanted to say something. They wanted to feel like they were part of something. And it really felt like a natural thing. It wasn't like, oh my God, they sent me a survey. Oh no. We really didn't have to push. It was a moment where people wanted to share their voices. And I think that was really captured in the fact that we got just hundreds of responses all the time, and we didn't have to do that much work for it.
So the intensity of post October 7th, which unfortunately continues, only grows more complex and in depth, was definitely central to the experience, both of fielding the survey and of looking at the data. The survey's constructed around M squared has a initiative called Values in Action, which have the fortune to be the evaluator for. It's one of the reasons they turned to me. And it was constructed around a series of value dilemmas of asking people how the situation is meeting them around these dilemmas. But before we go to the dilemmas, we asked just three questions, which asked them to agree or disagree to the following statements. We are in a critical historical moment for the Jewish people. And essentially, there were 73% strongly, very strongly agreed, and 90% strongly agreed. In other words, almost everybody basically were in very strong agreement with the statement. And that unto itself, even though it's obvious to you when you're in it, to have such across the board and with no difference between the different sectors of Jewish education, people saying we're in the moment. Then we asked that we gave the following statement: I have an important role to play in helping my learners grapple with this historical moment. And so the numbers dropped from 73% very strongly agree to 48% very strongly agree and 27% strongly agree, with almost everyone else agreeing. And then the next statement was, I feel able to help my learners grapple with this historical moment. And here we dropped to 14% very strongly agreeing and 22% strongly agreeing. In other words, we have a minority here of 36% who really feel a strong sense of confidence. So we go from a perspective of basically an existential agreement that we're in an incredibly formative, historical, challenging moment, to a sense of shlichut, slightly, less intensive, but still a very widespread sense of shlichut that we need to address this moment, and then to a bigger drop, to a sense of confidence. And that's really, I think, the big finding. In other words, the sense of how do I grapple? How do we meet the moment? And the report kind of dived into, first of all, what does it mean to meet the moment? And then to look at how people are staying there responding, to maybe develop a bit of a language and a framework for thinking about a response. So the value dilemmas were wide-ranging, but three came up to the fore. And it's not surprising. Safety and fear, 72% of the respondents selected. Facts versus narrative, that area of dilemma, 70% selected. And hope, despair, 64% selected. Other ones, which were selected by a broad variety, but not at that level, solidarity, fragmentation, loneliness, belonging, power, fragility, particularly universal, loyalty, betrayal, doubt, conviction. But the first three, the safety, fear, facts, narratives, hope, despair, really signal this need to grapple with what is going on. How do I instill a fear of a sense of safety amongst my students and constituents? How within that can we breed? Can we also find hope, even though that fear is overwhelming? And the whole issue of who do we believe? What narratives do we touch with? And also one thing that's really important to emphasize here, there was really no difference between the sectors of Jewish education. Some sectors were slightly more confident than other sectors. For instance, people on campus who've really been thinking about processing the vision over Israel for a relatively long period of time, you saw greater levels of confidence. People who were Israel educators were real standouts. People who are in the yeshivish world had a different set of concerns. They were kind of, can take them out. The security of community overrides in many aspects, but other than that, everyone was pretty much in the same boat. And so we developed within that, basically, so you have these top three dilemmas that everyone's grappling with. How do we interpret what's going on? How do we create a sense of safety? How do we find hope amongst despair? And then within that, people took it in different directions. And so what we took, what we developed out the idea of purposeful or intentional kind of educational communication. And we just kind of really developed frameworks for thinking about how educators are doing that in the moment. And we hopefully that it was helpful for people to just give a sense of stimulating a response in terms of your own contexts. And I know from listening, I was just listening this morning to David, one of David Brighton's podcasts with A Day School, director in the post-October 7th context, and just the holistic nature of the need. And it touches so many different aspects of the day school experience that it's a massive task. And it's a task which he said, and which I've heard from many other people, it's a game changer. Some of the things we were doing before we continue to do, but there are many new things that we now have to take upon ourselves. And it seems that we're really in the kind of one of these moments where things shift. And it's a moment that, on one hand, in some ways, it's a privilege to be able to contribute to, and hopefully we can bring all our skills, but it's a privilege we would rather not have.
I want to start with hearing from Alexandria and Will what reactions you have to the survey, and especially some of the salient points that Ezra raised in terms of the feelings that came, you know, after October 7th, feelings of lack of confidence to be able to help students grapple with this moment, and the dilemmas, the kind of dilemmas that came to the fore in the study.
It's taking me back to October 7th, and I was in shul and synagogue, like coming in, and I remember seeing the rabbi of the synagogue. His face was like, it was obvious that there was something happening. And I thought, like, wow, someone's got to tell him to like chill out a little bit. But it became clear what was taking place. And as it was Simchat Torah, we were meant to dance around with the Torahs. And as we were learning this information and sobbing and dancing, I was thinking about the rabbi's experience and thinking, on Monday morning, I'm going to have to do some version of this with our students. And those three data points that you projected of, you know, this is a critical moment in Jewish and Israeli history, and there's an important role for day school professionals, for my team to play in this. And then, like, oh gosh, like, can I affect positive change here for our students, for their families, and what's that going to look like Monday morning when we come into school? Was an overwhelming task, and it had to be done in a thoughtful way. And so we started our upper L. Our third, fourth, and fifth grade day with tefillah. We started with prayer and relationships, and the students started by writing down on cards what their questions were. We had students whose parents had turned on the news and they knew everything there was to know, and students for whom this was their first exposure. And it was a lot then, and it's been a lot of continuous evaluation and action since then.
I would say, regarding specifically the study, the two dilemmas that we are struggling the most with is this idea of fact versus narrative. But I think more specifically in Toronto, it's been that dilemma of safety versus fear. You know, chat since October 7th has actually come under some physical threat numerous times, including on October 12th. So it's our very first experience. You know, we've all come back. We've come back here on the Monday. We're all in shock. Things are really struggling. I'm a Jewish history teacher, so I've been kind of tasked with this job of making sense of this moment in time. And then within days, we have the first of a few physical attacks on the school. And it's really reinforced this idea where students really feel, I think in some ways, like they're entering history in a way that they have never experienced to this point. You know, our school is very STEM heavy. And for years, I've always had to kind of explain to my students and to their parents why learning history is valuable and why the study of history is so significant. And this is the first year where I don't have to do that. You know, it's very clear to a great many stakeholders just how significant the study of history is to this moment. And it's great, but the reason why that exists is pretty scary.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Unfortunately, we are definitely living through a moment in history that will be written about and discussed for a long time to come. Let's get back to the question of confidence, which I think is a really interesting term that the study looked at. Will, you talked about all the questions that the students had, and I'm sure they've been asking questions ever since. How confident did your teachers have your teachers felt handling all the questions they have? And you, of course, teachers have to deal with so much more than they're used to dealing with. It's first of all, it's history. It's questions about history. It's questions about politics. It's incredibly challenging social emotional questions. It's questions about anti-Semitism that they're seeing in the news and in the streets. Talk to us about your teachers and how they're coping.
Our teachers are so brave, and it is a pleasure to work alongside them. I realized very quickly, like, I'm eager to be there for our students and families and our teachers. And our teachers are the ones who have so much more curricular and experience with having these conversations with our students. And so I knew that we really needed their help. We were 3 weeks into a new shaliach as we started the school year, and I knew I needed to rely on him, but also it was a new culture and new community for him, and so he was going to need to rely on me and the other administrators and teachers. But that what he was bringing was so valuable. We've tried to follow the students' questions to kind of let their curiosity guide what we chose to explain to them, but also the balance of a lot of our families are not interested in their students getting an up close and personal look at what's happening. And so we tried to think about it. We highlighted the relationships that our families that were in Israel for the year, how they were navigating this and kind of being there for those families and the rest of Am Yisrael. And the other details we fleshed out as they came along. But we did not feel confident. I think each step felt like we were like, are we gonna step here? Okay, this is going okay. Oh, this part's not going okay, and we were tentative.
Yeah,
I think that even the notion of having confidence is kind of absurd when you're in a moment in time that you have never experienced before. You know, this idea that, like, how do you prepare for a present and a future that looks very different than it did 12 hours ago. And I think it's not just a sense of curricular confidence, but it's also, I think, like, the socio-emotional confidence of you have all of these students who are, yes, they don't know necessarily how to deal with the anti-Semitism online. They don't know all of the history. They don't know all of the complexities. But more so than that, many of them were really traumatized. And you're also dealing with, at least for my high school students, kids who have just gotten past COVID. So COVID was already this element of trauma. And now they have this. And, you know, there's, like, I think with a lot of them, there's this idea that nothing good is ever going to happen again. And so it's trying to deal with their hope and their optimism for the future as well.
So we went in the work, we focused in on the relationship piece. In other words, when there's a powerful emotional event, is an educational setting able to pull that in to the fabric of education? In other words, can it be a true educational experience as opposed to kind of a disciplinary experience where I'm learning, I have tefillah and I have history and I have it, but it's not speaking to the broader emotional experience of the students. And so, like, where you went well with the, I thought really interesting, where you went to interpersonal relationships with Israel and Israelis as a first place to absorb that kind of, and that's what I think that educators who are not used to educating relationally and bringing, like, really intense emotional and kind of, it could be also political events into the life of the educational institution, I think they would be the ones who would have the greatest struggle. I think that's what we had a sense of confidence in our heads when we were writing, is that somebody was able to work relationally could at least absorb the shock. And it sounds to me that's where you both went.
I think it's more than just relationally. I think what we saw was there's a relational component of, like, you're in this trauma, you're a student or a family, perhaps in the school. And part of our job as the educators is to kind of hold that emotional piece and to kind of show you that you're safe and listen to, etc. I think it's more than that, though. I also think it's about A certain ability to, and this is what we say partly in the report, and this builds off some of M Squared's general approach, which is it's also about being able to hold the big questions educationally, not necessarily to have all the answers, not necessarily to be an expert in content around Israeli history or politics, but at least it's not just about the relationship. It is about that saying, okay, you students are asking big questions, right? And we asked people actually in the survey to list some of the big questions that their students were kind of asking implicitly or explicitly. And there was hundreds of unbelievably big, interesting, powerful, difficult questions. You know, why do they hate us? What does this mean for the future of the Jewish people? What am I safe? Why do these things happen? You know, what does this mean about Israelis? Like really powerful questions. And those require more than just a relationship. They require also an ability to think about big ideas. It doesn't necessarily require me to know all the details of every, you know, political government policy or sort of that kind of factual knowledge, but it certainly requires that. And I'm curious to Alexandria and Will, you both have teams and colleagues, and I'm assuming that there are people in your schools who aren't necessarily Israel experts, but they can handle or they try to handle some of those other big questions. And I'm wondering how they're handling those questions now, and especially now a few months later, because this survey was done in November when clearly we were still seeing a lot of shock. And now, you know, several months later, unfortunately, have your teachers kind of got into a rhythm? Do they have more answers than they did before? Is it getting easier?
I think we're heading towards a moment where it's about to get more difficult. I have some of the teachers who are engaged in that Zoom work, who are like really, whose sleeves are rolled up and they are engaging with our Israeli families, are also starting to question the war. And so I had a teacher who's like leading that work here come into my office the other day and say, like, I don't agree with what's happening and I don't know what to say about it. And I didn't tell her, like, I am also struggling with what's happening and I also don't know what to say. Part of our response, and I imagine that chat is in a little bit of a different place, but I have never been to Toronto, so I don't know, is that the Ann Arbor community is a very, very liberal place. And I had a hunt, like at the end of last year, I was hearing more like families saying, we just want more nuance in the way that you're talking about Israel. And it wasn't to say that it wasn't nuanced before, but they just wanted more of the Palestinian narrative or just more of a broader narrative in our Israel conversation. And so part of it was a strategic choice to focus on relationships and say, like, we can't hold the expertise. We can hold the school families and the school community. And together we'll like figure out where we're going to go next. And that's as much as I had confidence in, right? Like, I am here for you all, and together we'll journey.
So I think it's a little different at chat. Mm-hmm. So first of all, by and large, our community, not super liberal. So for me personally, I am very, very strongly also emphasis on the nuance, because I think that nuance is critical for students right now, never more so than ever. But I also think that it's critical for our parents. It's critical for our entire community, because this has been like the death of simplicity. Like your views can be very dichotomized. Right. And I feel like
what this leading moral clarity.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. It is like the beginning and the end of that, where both you can see this sense of, to me, moral clarity in certain arenas of the war. And then there is an element that is completely lacking that. And I think that students, by and large, at least in Toronto, a lot of what they have received in terms of their Israel education is one in which moral clarity is very black and white. And that's not real life. And I tend to find that if you are educated about Israel in a very black and white way, then if you go on to university and you learn about things that you have never learned about before or whatever, you tend to react in the same black and white way, except it's not the way that we in the Jewish community would necessarily want you to respond. Right? Wherein your view of Israel becomes very black and white, it remains black and white, but in a very negative perspective. And so to me, that nuance is like the most critical element of this. But it's hard because people have really difficult emotional reactions, you know? And it's that emotional element I'm finding really challenging in our community, because people don't want to hear that the story might be more complicated than they think it is.
We do a weekly Ask the Rabbi in one of our classes, and a kid wrote, if God is goodness, right? And goodness, is there God in people who don't like Jews? If any of you have answers, it's a hard question. Like I'm really struggling with what to say to this kid.
I think the theological dimension, you know, must be coming out in some of the students, and that's just one more, you know, we bring them to Tfilot, we bring them to Jewish texts on history, and God is there, and where is, you know, helping them think through where God is at this time, I'm sure is just one more extremely challenging, you know, mission that our schools have to deal with. I want to get back to the educators, because Will, you started talking about how your educators are, you know, they're struggling with, you know, challenges of their own perspectives, mm-hmm. their own confusion sometimes, and presenting at the same time some kind of message or curriculum to the students. So talk about what you're seeing your teachers are going through, how you support them, how they're supporting each other, how maybe outside organizations like M Squared and others, they're turning to them for guidance. What are they dealing with?
So I think we all feel a little lost, right? This confidence piece is hard to navigate. I was at the head of schools retreat a few weeks ago, and Claire led a session about the Yoms. And I took that worksheet back to our staff, and I said, like, let's talk about what has been central to our, so thank you, Claire, what has been central to the way that we think about the Yoms as a school? What are the values that come out of that? What feels like different for this year that we want to retain or that we want to put off to the side? And then again, like kind of reapproaching, what do we want what this year's Yom celebration to look like? And taking that heavy lifting off of our shoulders by using M Squared or, you know, whoever it is in that moment was so helpful. Because I think we feel like this is it's not business as usual. And some of the values are still the same. It's our job to create strong Jewish identities in our students, to create a strong connection to Israel. The path feels like it's a little bit rockier right now, and we still have to step on those stones on our way. And so we're struggling.
We have a different set of struggles, which is that our community is very large and there are tons of different subjects. And so we have a number of teachers who really are desperate for more information and don't know necessarily where to find it and don't feel like they have the confidence to engage in these conversations with students that they can't answer these big questions that students are asking. And I think that there's a big fear where they don't want to say the wrong thing, so they say nothing. And to me, I think that that's where organizations like M Squared and whatnot really come in, because there's a lot of fear, I think, right now about saying the wrong thing, right? And I think that maybe we also need to be aware as educators broadly that there may be room for that, but that there is no such thing as the right thing to say right now in almost any situation, right? And that's the thing I've really loved about M Squared is this idea of the value conflict. And how do you kind of see these rooms for disagreement within the reality that we're living in right now? And how can you argue and how can you disagree? And you can still create that sense of community even with people that you're not agreeing with.
Yeah, and I think Alexandria is exactly right about the fear of saying the wrong thing, because the moment seems very weighty, right? This is an important moment for the Jewish people. So, and I have an important job. So, that is no small pressure. And so I think that's true. And as things get more complicated, and as the war is not some quick, oh, you know, one and done thing, I think the stakes are high, and we all know the stakes are high. And so that is, on one hand, I guess, a positive thing. On the other hand, it's scary. And we're seeing that people are concerned about not saying the right thing. And I think the other thing that undermines confidence is that feeling that you're alone. And, oh my gosh, I don't know who to turn to, or I feel like I'm the only one with this issue, and I'm stuck in my institution, and I haven't had a chance to talk to my colleagues much because there aren't so many opportunities to do that. And so therefore I feel alone, and I'm scared of doing the wrong thing. And therefore, and I know that this is complicated, and I know that I have multiple stakeholders. Also, I have different kinds of families, and I have teachers, and I have Israelis, and I might have all kinds of people in my ecosystem, and that's very complicated. We're seeing all of that. Like Will said, we're actually in the process right now of this whole series of workshops about preparing for Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut, and we're seeing all of those fears. And I think one of the things that we are seeing as a result is that the confidence grows when you feel like you're not alone, and you feel like you have some kind of tool to hold on to. It doesn't have to be the magic bullet or the perfect answer, but a tool to hold on to. And one of the tools that we always use, which is not the only one, is that sense that let's think about the value that we want to center, right? We can't answer everything, and we can't deal with all the complications. But if we say to ourselves, what is the core value that we want to center in our work as regards Israel right now? Do we want to focus on solidarity? Do we want to focus on community? Do we want to focus on peoplehood? Do we want to focus on sacrifice, pride? Whatever it is that an educator or a school might choose, I think gives them a way to kind of just get an anchor in this complicated situation. And that anchor can carry you through at least a little bit until the next stage, when maybe something will change and maybe you'll do something different. And that's great. And that's what we've been seeing currently. And I'm happy that Will found it useful. I think we're trying to make that available and just remind people, what's the value? What's the story you want to tell? Figure that out. It's not easy. Maybe you'll change your mind tomorrow, but today you'll have something.
So I'll add to build on what Claire was saying. So I'm not an educator, but I'm speaking to a lot of educators in the course of the different research projects I'm engaged in. I think there's maybe, I'm thinking as I'm speaking, but there's like three layers here. One is the basic emotional, and we touched on this in the report, the basic emotional needs of the educator to be able to speak. And many people just wrote how difficult it is even to speak. I recently spoke to someone at Hillel International, and they spoke of they had their kind of international gathering convening, I think about a month ago. And just the experience of being with other professionals who are struggling like you are, as being really important. And it's just what Claire was saying. And one of the things we did push for in the report is the idea that within your professional teams, in this case would be day schools, to create a culture of speaking. In other words, the need to actually speak about what's going on, specifically because it's also about Israel is involved, not to mention anti-Semitism and all other types of fears. And there is this culture of fear of evoking political kind of angst. So to normalize speaking, even amongst creating a safe space with staff to feel you're supported and you can speak your mind in a safe environment where, you know, donors and board members aren't going to be there, and parents, and just to normalize this, the act of speaking about what's going on. And then the second layer is, and this I'm taking from a project I've been doing with Resetting the Table, some valuation work, but it's actually the valuing the hearing piece. In other words, you as a teacher don't have to, in such a traumatic time, give your opinion, tell them what's right. But it's actually to hold a space where people feel they can speak, just like you as a teacher need to speak with your peers. It's to create that culture of safety in the school that you can say to your students, speak. This is a really difficult time, traumatic issues with focusing on for an element of history today in the making, or we're coming out from Tefillah, or we're coming out from another point, Jewish studies, or whatever it'll be. But there's no right answer. Speak. We need to hear each other, and we can use the text that we have in front of us to try and find analogies in history or time. And then the third level is actually proactive responses, which can be, Claire began to touch on, which could be all kinds of And we also began to try and lay that out in the report of what people were talking about. It could be focusing in on just helping people, social welfare work. It could be on political activism. It depends on where a community is. Then Abel's being together. In other words, there's a core distinction in kind of the collective belonging between ceremony and conversation. Sometimes you also need to do things together, where you're in lockstep and where you sing the same songs and you feel like you're contributing. And it's to build that sense of togetherness alongside of opportunities for discussion.
You're hitting on something as well that's I found very interesting about this entire last 6 months is that when you're talking about like the value of speaking and hearing and listening, there's a lot of emphasis I think that has been put on how badly our students are doing, and how we need to be there as a way of helping them deal emotionally, politically with everything. And I think there's maybe not as much attention, at least there hasn't been in my world. On the fact that a number of educators are really struggling, right? And that many of us are also really not doing okay. And so this notion as well that complicates all of this is that how do you be able to be that person for your students? How do you be able to hold these multiple perspectives? How do you be able to be a listening ear when you yourself are falling apart? And that tension between the idea of you want to be this role model, what part of modeling is you model the strength, and what part of modeling is that you model the brokenness? I think that that's a really interesting tension at the heart of Jewish education right now.
We've seen that so much with everybody that we've been working with. And first of all, we saw it in the survey where people, ex many, many people spoke explicitly about, I just can't, actually, there's a quote on the front of the report, which I'm looking at, if I am myself able to process this moment, then I'd be in a better position to help my learners. And that's exactly it, right? You have to put your own mask on before you can help the person sitting next to you, and I think we've seen that so much. And so a lot of work that we've done in the past few months has really just been to help people process it for themselves. And I'm amazed actually by how many educators we've worked with who have, we've done a simple writing exercise, 5 minutes of automatic writing, just process, answer a few prompts, have said, that's the first time I've had a chance to do that. And it's very simple and it doesn't take very long, but it needs a space and you need someone to hold that for you. And the place to do it. And it's amazing to me both how few people have had a chance to do it and also how effective it is and how much people appreciate it.
It's like you're talking, Alexandria, about a high school and an elementary school. Like we have some who are trying to put on their masks, and the people next to them are on an amusement ride, right? Like they're just not processing it at all. And so those, and like we're not in a hurry to tell a second grader that their teacher feels traumatized right now. And so like that discrepancy is just another element of complication that we're dealing with.
I want to talk now about this question of shifting that Claire mentioned at the beginning. We're in a time when Israel education, Jewish education, Jewish day school education, perhaps in some ways, we're feeling there's a need to shift, and we are shifting. And you've talked a little bit about how things are shifting, but there's a lot of fog around what that means. And so I wonder if you could talk about where you've shifted, especially curricularly. Have there been significant shifts, or is it primarily, you've talked about relationships and other things, but where have your teachers or your teaching shifted during this time, and where you think you will shift moving forward?
So one shift that has been significant for our school is in the aftermath of October 7th, we were having conversations, and I just felt like there was a lot of othering, a lot of not understanding of what was happening in the broader non-Jewish community, and in the Muslim community. We were not super aware. And so we started a pen pal program with the Michigan Islamic Academy because we wanted more brothering and less othering. And that has been a really helpful exercise for us. It's the parents have been very pleased about it. The students have written back and forth multiple times, and we're working towards an in-person meeting. And I feel great about the value set that we're putting forth there, right? We're looking to strengthen our own Jewish identities. And at the same time, we're not saying that we are alone in the citadel, but that this needs to happen in a broader community.
We have not had that shift yet, which I mean, I would like to see. Toronto has been its own beast since October 7th. I don't know if it's made it into the news in the US and in Israel, but the situation, political situation here since October 7th has been very bad. So what's actually, I find the most interesting is the togetherness that has shifted, that sense of togetherness that has really shifted since October 7th, where, you know, even from a Jewish day school enrollment perspective, you know, enrollment is skyrocketing against the backdrop of things like the Toronto District School Board bringing in all of these policies that are and programs that are very problematic for Jewish students. And so, you know, there's that adage of like, what's good for the Jews is bad for Judaism, and what's bad for the Jews is good for Judaism. It kind of feels like it's been this perverse, you know, things are not great for us at an individual level, but it's involved a strengthening of community and a strengthening of Jewish peoplehood here. We'll see how long that lasts. But
Claire, what are you seeing? I'm sorry. What are you and Ezra? What are you seeing in terms of shifting? Are people able to talk about changes in curriculum? Is it too soon? Too difficult?
From what I'm seeing, it's a little bit early. The conversations I'm having, it's sort of like, we know that we're going to have to probably make some kind of long-term changes or whatever, but not quite sure yet. The war's not over yet. You know, the hostages are not home yet. I feel like it's very hard to go to that next. Like, we're not in the first crisis level. We're like, now we're sort of in a routine, but, you know, we're not. This isn't the end of the story yet, by any means, educationally.
I think that there is some cognitive shifts that are becoming more and more apparent, having to do with the complexity of a Jew's relationship to the world, of which Israel is a part and is a background and is a trigger. But it has to do with one's local situation, which obviously is different, like from Ann Arbor to a Toronto. But it's universal in the sense of its complexity, and the sense that I, as a Jew, have a historical memory that is different than my neighbors, and it's relevant to the way I live my life. And that's the key issue that's come up, and that I can speak differently with a Jew and with a non-Jew. There's issues that I want to speak about, that this enrollment piece of wanting to be, or the feeling that needs to be with other Jews. And then you have people who don't necessarily have strong affiliations to the community and don't have a rich kind of Jewish communal fabric to deal with, and seeing them very differently. What's very clear to me in the work that I'm doing is that the discourse as a result of all of this has become far more complicated for directors of institutions in thinking about how do I deal with what was previously, you know, assumed subjects. The complexity of the moment comes through by not being able to any longer take for granted certain assumptions. So, for instance, the need to actually consider critical voices towards what's going on in Israel, it's everywhere now, and you can't ignore it. And it comes up in different contexts in different ways, but pretty much everyone's having to actually think about how do I grapple with these terrible images coming in? And we need to speak about it because our students and our constituents are being flooded with them. So you can't ignore it. And so there is, I think, tremendously diverse responses. And I think there's tremendous value of actually floating those responses, enabling people to learn from their peers what they're doing, because it's all very formative. But there are some people out there doing incredible work.
I want to pick up on one thing that you focused on in the report that... at the end of your report, you talk about something called a personal educational narrative as something that could be critical for teachers to develop. I didn't quite understand it, to be honest, but I'm wondering if you could talk more about that and what you meant by it.
The idea is that people need to be in the writing exercise that Claire began to speak about earlier is part of that need to be purposeful in the way that they're responding. In other words, what is my strength in terms of Jewish knowledge and curricula and pedagogical practice? What are the big questions that my students are asking? What values as a Jewish educ as part of my institution that I work with, what are our values as Jews that we want as educators to push forward? And these are things you can do in discussion in deliberation with your with within the institution, and then to speak to your strengths. So if you do Jewish history, then that's your strength. How do I bring that to this other piece of the puzzle? And that's what we meant. In other words, to develop from a place of your strength and what you can contribute, a play ability to speak.
That's great. Yeah, Will and Alexandria, maybe you could talk about how you and your colleagues have been able to keep the focus on your values, your school's values, their personal values, their students' values during this challenging time.
I was rushing to answer the other question. This is quite difficult, right? Like it is holding yourselves, your work portfolio, like your students' needs, all of those pieces at once. I think we knew we needed to expand our perspective. We're still not sure like what the longer term pieces need to look like. I also felt like we had this privilege of not having the most sophisticated Israel program before this, right? We had our yoms, we had the songs, we had like the input from the Israeli families and Israeli teachers, and like the result of that was a largely positive Israel-based identity, and that worked for us. I think we were leaving some pieces up to chance that we just don't feel comfortable leaving up to chance yet, but we're not, it's the first time we're kind of digging into that piece, and we need to think about how we're going to express which values and in which way. So I am nervous about how to convene that longer term conversation.
Listen, for me personally, I would say the biggest thing is trying to remember who I was and who my students were on October 6th. Because I find that since October 7th, it's been this tremendous sea change for many in the Jewish community, particularly in the diaspora, looking at our relationship with the state of Israel, our relationship with our neighbors, our relationship with our state, what is home now, what is. And I think just trying to remember what your guiding values were before you were afraid and before that fear made you maybe a little angry, at least for me. And I imagine that my students are going through very similar things where they may not recognize necessarily who they are, their guiding values, their guiding ethos, the same way that they did on October 6th. And so I think trying to remember who you are and what mattered to you educationally before the conflict as a way of coming back to that touch point of what will matter to you tomorrow.
If you liked what you heard, please give the podcast 5 stars and share it with your friends and on social media. You can follow our podcasts by searching for Prisma on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. To learn more about Prisma, go to our website at www.prisma.org and follow us at PrismaCJDS. Prisma's work, including this podcast, is made possible by generous funders who believe deeply in the power of a great Jewish day school education. Visit Prisma.org to add your name to the growing list of donors supporting day schools across North America. Thank you for tuning in to today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed and will come back again soon for future episodes.